3, 2, 1. 7 things you don't really need to know, but probably should. I'm Ciara Revan, and this is the Sunday 7.
In today's episode, we dive into the lab-grown meat industry. We hear the crucial next steps of NASA's Artemis mission, and scientists are tapping into limitless solar energy from space. But first, it was on this day in 1834, the electric motor was invented by American inventor Thomas Davenport. Every year, households across the country get misty-eyed at the latest Christmas adverts. Retailer John Lewis traditionally leads the pack with a heartfelt, emotive story, and this year was no different.
All the small things.
Called The Beginner, this year's John Lewis Christmas ad shows a middle-aged man struggling to learn how to skateboard. At the end of the clip, it's revealed that his endeavour was to help bond with his foster daughter, who comes to visit clutching her own board. It's pretty heartwarming stuff, so heartwarming you can forget that what you're watching is in fact an advertisement. As a nation, we love these ads, but we wanted to get to the bottom of why. So we decided to have a sit down with Anne-Marie Hanlon, a digital marketing lecturer at Cranfield School of Management. Hi Anne-Marie, thanks for joining us. So every year, the big supermarkets and retailers spend millions on mini movie TV ads, and sometimes they don't even show you the food. So why do big retailers spend so much time and effort on these ads, and what's the message they're trying to convey to us?
The purpose of an ad is to get some sort of engagement, whether that's people talking about it, sharing it, thinking about it, or commenting about it, or acting on the message. And the ads that really work well are those that actually get an emotional connection with us. And consumers do respond much better to messages with an emotional appeal rather than just a rational appeal. The emotional appeal tells a story and it makes you say, ah, oh, or wow, or look at that, or it made me cry, or this happened when I saw that. Did you see that ad? You remember the ad, and then when you take out your wallet, it's front of mind.
There's been a shift in the content of the adverts over the years. It used to be about showcasing their Christmas food, and now it seems like what they want to tell is a greater and more elaborate story. Why do you think there's been this move towards storytelling?
Absolutely. There was a time when, as you say, the all Christmas ads just focused on pile it high, sell it cheap. Lots and lots of products at really great prices, and it was all pretty similar. It was very much, I'm selling this, so are you, and so are they. It's all the same. There was nothing distinguishing. There was nothing different about the product offers. So John Lewis threw a curved ball in some years ago, and instead of saying, here are all the products, they turned around and they said, ah, listen to our story. This is about a story about our brand. And as soon as they did that, other brands started doing exactly the same thing and started telling us stories. We remember stories, but we might not remember who has the cheapest mince pies or Christmas pudding or turkey offers.
As viewers and consumers, we also love these ads. When they come out, we compare them to see which one is the best. It's like the supermarkets have got us hook, line and sinker. Why do we as consumers love them so much, even when we know it's advertising?
I think we don't mind being sold to as such, but Christmas ads are different. Christmas ads have become part of the journey towards the festive season. You see the John Lewis advert, you see the Lidl advert, the M&S advert, whatever it is. And it's a signal that Christmas is coming. The holidays are on their way. And it brings us back to, in theory, a time of joy where we spend more time with our family.
The John Lewis Christmas adverts are famous for having a deeper message and have often been linked with charity campaigns. This year, they've partnered with Action for Children and Who Cares Scotland. Does the storytelling element speak to our hearts and make us want to be more charitable and giving?
It's a really interesting question. My favourite ad this year is actually the Lidl Bear.
We never intended to create a Christmas character. It just happened. And one big Christmas shop later, a new stuffed star was born.
Some sort of Lidl Bear.
And the Lidl Bear is a great story of lost and found over Christmas. And Lidl has been incredibly creative about this because they're showcasing a product that you can't buy. So they're showcasing this Lidl Bear that isn't for sale. it's not available. But what they are saying is they're playing on this whole key cultural artifact, the teddy bear. And everybody remembers, hopefully, having a teddy bear as a child. And it's something you cling on to and it's nostalgic. But they're also attaching this to a deeper message, which is not everybody has a bear for Christmas. So they really brilliantly have put in a toy bank in all their stores to encourage shoppers to actually leave toys. Now, maybe you buy them from Lidl, maybe you buy them from somewhere else, but you donate a toy this Christmas to make sure every child has a bear this Christmas. And this is really brilliant and really creative and very clever, because it's not focusing on the concept of something you can buy in store, but it's focusing on the lost and the found and the happy ever after, which, okay, maybe they can't completely deliver, but they're taking us on that journey.
As times change rapidly in the wake of the lockdowns, a pandemic, war and cost of living crisis, will we start to see them fading out of fashion?
I think Christmas 2022 has signalled a change in tone in the Christmas ads. So the Christmas ads for 2022 are much more toned down. They're much less extravagant in places. I think the retailers realise that they can actually, instead of creating a stereotypical, here is a lot of food advert, they can actually use the advert for good. They can actually use this to actually deliver a message that does much more good beyond just the Christmas shopping basket.
How close are we to cruelty-free meat? Well, we might be closer than you'd think. For the first time ever, the US Food and Drug Administration has approved meat grown in a laboratory. They've given the green light to California-based Upside Foods, meaning our friends across the pond could soon find their favourite synthesised meat products on their supermarket shelves. The process of creating this type of meat is an interesting one. Scientists first extract a biopsy, a small sampling of cells from a living animal taken with a needle or small incision. They place the cells in tanks where they're fed nutrients like fats, sugars and vitamins they need to multiply. When they grow big enough, they can be moved into larger bioreactors. And after 2 to 8 weeks, you have edible meat. The FDA says the world is experiencing a food revolution.
And the FDA is committed to supporting innovation in the food supply.
Uma Valetti is Upside Foods CEO. He said he stopped eating meat in medical school when he saw the detriment of mass meat production, but then he saw an opportunity for a slaughter-free option.
During my work in cardiology, we were working on stem cells and injecting them into patients' hearts to regrow the heart muscle. And that's where this idea came from of, could you grow meat directly from animal cells? And if so, what would that mean for the world? It has significantly lower environmental impact, which means less downsides, less greenhouse gas emissions, less water pollution, and also, really importantly, I think, less use of energy for making the same amount of meat in the world.
With explosive population growth and global demand for meat expected to double in the next 30 years, Valetti believes the lab-grown option is the innovative solution we need. Animal agriculture is responsible for as much as 20% of total greenhouse gas emissions, and if meat consumption continues according to the current trends, it could be impossible to keep global warming below 1.5 degrees Celsius. Advocates believe the cultured meat will reduce the need to slaughter animals.
We're looking forward to a future where we can produce very large quantities of meat without having the downsides of intense animal agriculture.
Americans will be able to feast on this new type of meat in just a few months. Here in Ireland, lab-grown meat is still a way off, but the big question is, would you eat it? Still to come on the Sunday 7, award-winning medical innovations and an update from NASA's Artemis program. Last week, NASA's Artemis rocket took to the skies on a mission to the moon. Sitting atop the rocket is the Orion spacecraft. Although it's unmanned this time, the spacecraft is equipped with a mannequin, which will register the impacts of the flight on the human body.
You know, I would say when I saw it lift off, it was a dream. You know, it's the first step we're taking to long-term deep space exploration for not just the United States, but for the world. I mean, we are going back to the moon. We are working towards a sustainable program. And this is the vehicle that will carry the people that will land us back on the moon again.
That's Artemis's program lead, Howard Hu, speaking to the BBC's Laura Kuesenberg. According to Howard, this test flight is just the beginning, as NASA prepares to venture deeper into space than ever before. If the current Artemis flight is a success, then the next would be with a crew, followed by a third where astronauts would land on the moon again for the first time since Apollo 17 50 years ago. Once the safety of Artemis's components and systems has been tested and proven, the plan is to have humans living on the moon.
You know, certainly in this decade, I mean, we're going to have people living down the durations, you know, depending on how long we will be on the surface. You know, they'll be living, they'll have habitats, and they'll have rovers on the ground. That's what we're also working on at NASA. So not only are we able to work in delivering people to the moon, getting people down in the surface of the moon, they still have to have infrastructure. They have to have a habitat to live in. They have the fancy rover they're going to drive around.
But the goal isn't just to get people set up for a cushy life away from problems on Earth.
It's more than living. It's really about science. You know, we're going to the South Pole because, you know, water, you know, the theory is there's ice and there's able to extract water. That's huge. You know, being able to convert that into a potential fuel. For our propulsion systems is going to be a very interesting scientific, but also just the geological aspects of it. You know, we did collect lunar rocks and things like that, but if there are organisms that are embedded in that ice and things like that, could we be able to discover something new?
And that's not all. In returning to the moon, the hope is that we can go even further.
Moving forward is really to Mars. You know, that is a bigger stepping stone, a two-year kind of journey, potentially, depending on the orbit you take. And so it's really going to be a very important for us to learn a little bit beyond our Earth's orbit and then do a big step when we go to Mars.
A smart sensor for dressings that indicates how well a wound is healing has won this year's prestigious James Dyson Award International Prize. SmartHeal is a smart pH sensor integrated with a wound dressing. It can access the wound and detect infection without the need to remove the dressing. This is Tomasz Rzeczynski, SmartHeal's developer, speaking with Reuters.
Chronic wounds are wounds that don't heal properly. They take months, sometimes years to heal. So with such wounds, every time you take off the Band-Aid dressing, you're introducing new pathogens, you risk infections, you disrupt the tissue, slowing the healing process, and for most importantly, it's very uncomfortable for the patients, it's painful. So yeah, with SmartHeal, you can see beneath the dressing without taking it off.
SmartHeal was invented by three Polish students at the University of Warsaw. They plan to use their £30,000 prize money to start clinical trials and hope to start sales in 2025.
Still to come on the Sunday 7, the true scale of Tonga's volcano eruption and a lesson on the birds and bees.
Right after this.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
You're listening to the Sunday 7. Follow us for your weekday news espresso, or maybe try our UK edition. It's all in the usual places.
So Scientists have discovered the true ferocity of a huge volcanic eruption off the coast of Tonga in January. When Hunga Tonga Hartbeitt blew its top, it scattered water vapours and ash halfway to space and sent tsunami waves swelling out across the world. It was so powerful it even disrupted cloud systems as far as the UK. A new survey now offers a fresh picture of the scale of what happened. Scientists have fully mapped the area around the volcano, showing just how badly the seafloor has been sculpted and scarred. This is Dr. Kevin McKay, a marine geologist who led the survey, speaking with the BBC.
We didn't map enough. This volcano even exceeded our maximum expectations about how far the effects of this eruption was on the seafloor. It really was an absolutely outstanding event.
The eruption produced one of the biggest atmospheric explosions in history, and the impression left on the seafloor gives a sense of its violent energy. Scientists calculate that some 10 cubic kilometres of material has been displaced. That's equivalent to the volume of 4,000 Egyptian pyramids. Two-thirds of that was ash and rock ejected out of the volcano's opening, but the other third was material scraped off the sides of the volcano as debris fell back out of the sky and tumbled across the bottom of the ocean.
The plume itself rose 53 kilometres into the atmosphere. I mean, this was truly the most dramatic event in volcanic history since possibly Krakatoa in 1883.
This eruption was extraordinarily powerful, but there are similar volcanoes lurking underwater off coastlines around the world. By understanding what happened and why, there may be lessons to help us prepare in the future. Despite what you might have been told, pregnancy is not all about the birds and the bees. In fact, it's thanks to a humble amphibian that we even have modern-day pregnancy tests. This is Jeff Stritcher, a scientist and curator at the Natural History Museum. He explains how frogs played a surprising and important role in improving women's healthcare.
In the 1920s, an unassuming amphibian took center stage in the science of prenatal prediction. When looking for similarities between humans and the clawed frogs, they realized that the females produced eggs when injected with HCG, that's human chorionic gonadotropin. This hormone is released in large amounts by humans shortly after the zygote implants in the uterus. That means it's a pretty good test for pregnancy. To test for a pregnancy, the frog was injected with a woman's urine. If it produced eggs within 18 hours, that implied the woman was pregnant. Surprisingly accurate, this inexpensive and accessible test massively improved healthcare for women and was a standard method of testing for pregnancy until the 1960s. Because of being sent around the world as a pregnancy test, the clawed frog became an important model system for the study of developmental biology and also even fields as interesting as artificial intelligence and robotics.
The idea of wireless power has transfixed scientists and engineers for decades. It sounds like science fiction. Imagine robots building structures in space to capture the sun's power. Its energy is converted into microwaves and beamed to Earth, collected by a field of antennas and turned into electricity.
It's not science fiction that it's not just something on paper or in the lab, but it's ready to be deployed at a small scale. And of course, the challenge with applying this to space-based solar power is extending that scale and that power by a dramatic amount. And that will take some time. It's a huge challenge, of course.
That was Sanjay Vijendran from the European Space Agency. The challenge he describes is one that scientists are readily taking up. At the aerospace firm Airbus, researchers are running a small demonstration in their Munich lab. In the experiment, 2 kilowatts of power were collected from solar panels and sent wirelessly from a transmitter to a receiver at the other end of the room. That electricity lights up a model city. There's a long way to go from the small demonstration to sending back solar energy from space. A million times more power needs to be transmitted, and it's got to be sent a million times further. But the engineers at Airbus think it could be done. Scientists have been wanting to do this for decades. In 1977, NASA claimed that space-based solar power could replace fossil fuels.
It's reliable, will probably last billions of years, and if you collect its energy from above the Earth's atmosphere in space, it can be done continuously. By building huge solar satellites in space, NASA believes some of the sun's tremendous energy can be captured to lessen our dependence on more conventional fossil fuels.
Unlike solar energy on the ground, which is interrupted by nighttime and clouds, this method of solar energy capture generates power around the clock. It's only now it might become cost-effective because rockets can be used over and over again. Joseph Aschbacher is the Director General of the European Space Agency, and he's hopeful that these plans could revolutionise the way we see energy here on Earth.
If you could do it from space, and I'm saying if you could, because we are not yet there, then this would be absolutely fantastic. Solar-based power from space could really help enormously to address our energy shortages and our energy problem, which is about to come in the next decades.
As energy prices soar and the destructive impact of climate change are being felt, the pressure for the entire world to develop a new reliable source of energy is greater than ever.
This has been the Sunday 7. However you're listening, do us a favour and hit the follow button. We'll be back tomorrow at 7 a.m. with a regular Smart 7 Ireland edition. Have a great rest of the weekend.
Written, produced and published by Daph Doris.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Hi, this is Kira from the Smart 7 Ireland edition. Just to let you know, we're pausing this podcast from Friday the 25th of August, but you can still get up to speed in just 7 minutes if you search the Smart 7 and catch up with our UK edition. Thanks for listening.